Welcome back to Coast to Coast Sports. My name's Lucas. I'm here with my co-host, Bryce Brown. And this week, we got a special guest on here, my cousin, Zach Brewer. Zach, how are you doing?
Not too bad. How about you?
Doing great. Bryce, how are you doing today?
Man, I am doing great. Got off work this morning, came home, turned on the PlayStation, started playing some Madden, and man, it's the weekend. There's nothing better than the weekend. We have sports back, football, baseball, basketball, hockey. I mean, pretty much every day you get to watch a sport. So life is good right now.
Agreed. Speaking of football, we had a big weekend this last weekend. We had week one of the regular season kicking off. Just what were kind of some overview. We'll get more in depth here in a few minutes. What was kind of your overview of this last weekend there, Bryce?
Yeah, I thought there was a lot of good games. Surprisingly, not a lot of defense. I mean, just looking at some of the high-scoring games, I mean, Packers-Vikings was 43-34. Mm-hmm. The Seahawks put up 38 on the Falcons, who kind of made me look dumb with that one. And, you know, I mean, Raiders-Panthers, 34-30. I mean, there were very few teams that did not score a lot of points. Pretty high-scoring games, I think. You know, some of that defense you could attribute to possibly time off and just not having that chemistry. So a lot of miscommunication going on. Mm-hmm. But honestly, another thing that shocked me was that how there wasn't a lot of big time injuries. I was expecting more so. Agreed. A lot of big time injuries week one, but there seemed to be a lot more nagging injuries. I know, at least for my fantasy team, got about two or three players with hamstring injuries. So, you know, nagging injuries early on, just calf pulls, hamstring pulls, mm-hmm. groin pulls, you know, that's going to happen, especially when you don't have that preseason and the normal offseason to get in game shape.
Yeah. Zach, what was kind of your thoughts on this first week?
I thought the first week, like you said, there was a lot of big, a few upsets, but mm-hmm. I thought, like, especially with the Raider game, like, there was some bad defending on both sides. And it was how, like without the four preseason games, it really showed every team. Like, I saw, like, Washington, like, that game, I would have never expected the Eagles to lose that. Especially with Deshaun Jackson not being invincible the entire time. Washington just came back and threw caution to the wind.
Yeah, kind of my thoughts on the first week were, you know, I had a lot more high-scoring games than I thought there would be. I kind of had the opposite thinking coming in. I think there was going to be better defensive play than there was produced out on the field. I don't know why I'm surprised by that, but I always feel like defenses are kind of have the upper hand when it comes to that sort of stuff, because some players are learning a whole new playbook, different route tree, stuff like that. So blocking schemes if you're an O-lineman. So I was kind of surprised by how much offense we had. But I think we had some really good games to that happened this weekend. Like we guys were saying, a lot of upsets, a lot of picks that we had that we thought were going to do good this season that kind of laughed us in the face, Bryce, from the last episode. But we'll kind of go more into depth and over this podcast. So what would you say was your biggest surprise or takeaway from this weekend, Bryce, just from watching all the games and what happened?
Yeah, definitely the couple surprises. I mean, just honestly, if I'm being real, the Saints defense absolutely shocked me. Mm-hmm. I expected Tom Brady and the Bucs to kind of go out there. I believe I predicted them to win on the road there. But the Saints defense really stepped up, made some really big plays. Brady was intercepted twice. One was a pick six, the second interception, and that one was more so on him. The first one was just kind of a lucky play, right place, right time, in my opinion. But another shock was definitely the Lions' meltdown. Up, I believe it was like 23-7 at one point, and then you blow the lead to Mitchell Trubisky, of all people. who was 20 of 36 and had three touchdowns. And then you still had a chance to win and found a way to blow the game. Mm-hmm. Rookie running back dropping a touchdown pass that would have won the game basically with pretty much no time left. You know, that sucks, especially if you're a Lions fan, because I can imagine it just feels like, I mean, you have a potentially all-time great quarterback talent in Matthew Stafford, and you just continue year after year to let him down with no defense, mm-hmm. and just the weapons letting him down. And they didn't even have Kenny Galladay week one, who was out with a hamstring injury. So
I got a question for you, Bryce. Just kind of parking on Matthew Stafford really quick. Just kind of came up in my mind. Kind of carrying over to sports here. I know that Matthew Stafford probably doesn't have the same talent as a kind of combining sports here, a Mike Trout. But do you think if put in the right predicament, that if Matthew Stafford was on a team that had decent weapons around him, do you think he would be a top 10 quarterback with the people around him?
Oh, I mean, I think you could definitely make the argument right now that Stafford is a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. Yeah. I think that the top five in the NFL is definitely Patrick Mahomes, Russell Wilson, probably Lamar Jackson, Aaron Rodgers, and then I guess you could say maybe Drew Brees. But I would definitely make the argument that Stafford is right now a top 10 quarterback. Is he a championship-level quarterback if he were in a different situation? I 100% think so. The Lions are a lot like the Browns. They've just been a terrible franchise for so long and have been known for ruining historical players' careers. I mean, look at Barry Sanders, retired when he's 30. So did Megatron, Calvin Johnson. Yeah. I mean, just retiring when they're early. I'm surprised Stafford hasn't done it at this point, and he's been beat up, banged up. And the one play that always sticks out to me about Matthew Stafford is when, I believe it was against the Cleveland Browns, his rookie season. It was like week one or week two, I believe. He was hit. He made a throw, put him in a position on the goal line to win the game late. It was against the Browns. And he got hit, and he broke his collarbone, I believe. And he went back out there and threw a game-winning touchdown despite the injury. And I'm just thinking, that's the most Lions quarterback thing ever. You have this great quarterback who goes out and makes that play, and then how do you reward him? You do not build around him for the next 10 years. So, I mean, if he were in a different situation, say like the New England Patriots, yes, he's winning Super Bowls all day long. Even the Saints. I mean, you could even make an argument if he was on a team – possibly with the talent of the Cleveland Browns right now, that they would be a much better team with him than Baker Mayfield. So, yes, I definitely think better situation, he'd be better.
Yeah, I agree with that. Zach, so I'm going to kind of start off with that question to you. What about your thoughts on Matthew Stafford? And then lead into what was kind of your biggest shock slash upset of this first week?
Well, for Stafford, I've always considered him at least a top 10 quarterback as well. I think he really does show that the Lions really do need to build around him, because I've seen Megatron come through. I've seen Barry Sanders. I've seen them, like, their big talent, like Theo Reddick, and their whole offense has been built around him. And then when you don't really upgrade as years go, he hasn't really shown much anymore. And it's sad, because that Lions team from like the early 2010s to on, they were good. They were getting playoffs. Now it's just hard to even get like six wins out.
Great. And then what was kind of your biggest takeaway or thing that shocked you from this first week?
The two games that really came to mind was the Washington Eagles game was shocking, how the Eagles had them on the brink of losing. They kept the game close. And then Washington just came up with a Dwayne Haskins and them just throwing it down the field and just shoving it down their throat. And sorry to hate a Titans fan here, but the Titans game was probably the worst game I've ever watched in a couple years. Just low scoring. Both teams couldn't get any offense to work. I mean, Jerry Jeudy for Denver was just nonchalant. Didn't even look good. And Drew Locke, he's a good quarterback, but he's just not worth it. And then their coach would waste, not even using timeouts in the final 2 minutes. That's basic football.
Yeah.
You don't let them run the clock down to get to a field goal.
Yeah.
And I don't know. That was just the big game I thought was the biggest loss, especially for Denver. It was.
Yeah, that was those were a lot of crazy games that I thought were going to go a lot of different ways, especially from that last podcast, how we kind of thought the season was going to play out. One thing that I kind of did want to touch on, Cam Newton had a great game. I'm usually not too high on him, but he did have some great plays, two TDs. I think he had 75 yards passing. 75 yards rushing, actually. I'm sorry. And then he had on 15 carries. So I mean, he had a great day. Scoring two touchdowns in that for that new team, I think was great. What were your kind of thoughts on that first game in a Patriots uniform from there, Bryce?
Yeah, I thought it was I liked what Cam did, and I think it just goes to show how great of a coach Belichick is and Josh McDaniels, and how they decided that we're going to build an offense around him. And that's any great coach in NFL history is, okay, we're going to take the talent we have and build around that. Look at what Jim Harbaugh's done with Lamar Jackson in Baltimore, using his skill set, and they, you know, I mean, they made it to the divisional round last year and were the best team in the football or in the NFL in regular season. You know, so I was impressed, but I wasn't, because I kind of expected at least week one to be pretty good for the Patriots, because they were going up against the Dolphins team that really wasn't proven yet. They're young. They're still kind of rebuilding. No Tua there, and Fitzpatrick did not look good. But, yeah, I thought Cam looked good. He ran the ball good. Didn't make any incredibly deep throws. It was mainly short stuff. But, yeah, I mean, I definitely like what I saw from Cam. And if he can continue to play at a high level, I definitely think the Patriots could possibly win that division. But this is also a team that is not built for shootouts. When they get into shootouts, they're going to crumble. They're a team built kind of like how the Titans were last season, or at least at the end of last season, where we're going to play the time of possession game, we're going to run the football, grind out the clock, and play great defense and great situational defense.
Yeah, I would very much agree. That was a great comparison there with the Titans. I think this is kind of how Bill Belichick should run, has been running all of his games. Very good time manager, winding down that clock, and just having a great defensive presence on that field. Let's go to the ex-quarterback of the New England Patriots. Let's discuss this crazy stat that just came out for Mr. Tom Brady. He's had three interceptions in his last three straight games. Now, with this stat, he is joining the two great quarterbacks of our generation, Matt Schaub, and Blaine Gabbert, in this category. He is the third person to do this in the last couple of years. Zach, what are your thoughts on this first when you read this? Are you surprised by that? And just what are your thoughts on, is this kind of decline of Tom Brady?
I believe it is the decline of Tom Brady, because, well, you've seen him win the championships with New England, and they were just dominant with Gronk, and either way you could tell it, you could tell as soon as last year when he threw that last pick six, you knew his decline was coming. And again, it's early. He's got a new coach that isn't really good in Bruce Arians. But really, I don't really believe in Brady. I think he's going to retire sooner than later.
Yeah. Bryce, what are your kind of thoughts on this three interceptions in the last three games stat that just got thrown out this week?
Yeah, that's three pick sixes a pick six in three straight games dating back to week 17 of last season. It was against the Dolphins, and then the playoff game against the Titans, and then this week. But about Brady, I'm not on the hate train. I am against everybody who's saying Brady is declining. I still think at 43, there was one throw that he made in the first half. I don't remember if it was the first quarter or second quarter, but it was a kind of like a fade corner route to Chris Godwin for a 20 to 30 yard gain. And I was like, man, a 43-year-old quarterback making that kind of throw is really impressive to me. Now, for his two interceptions, is the pick six on him? Yes, I will 100% put that on him. But The first interception that was thrown to Mike Evans obviously quit on that route, and he definitely did not. And at 6'5", he could have went up and easily tipped that ball, possibly even could have caught it with his vertical. But is this the decline of Tom Brady? No. This is the signs of him going to a new team, having to learn a new system after 20 years of playing under the same coach in the same system, and having an offseason where you can't connect with your receivers and get on the same page is definitely going to hurt. And it showed Sunday, because you think about it. I mean, whether it was Wes Welker, Randy Moss, Julian Edelman, Brady knew where they were going to be before the play was even – I mean, before the ball was even snapped. I mean, he knew just by the way the defense, okay, Edelman's going to do this, and then he's there. So he just has to get that chemistry with Mike Evans, and it's going to take a while because of COVID and because of the lack of a typical offseason. It's going to take them till about week four, week five to really hit stride. But once they really – but once they hit stride about week four, five, six – everybody better watch out, because Brady with these weapons is going to be absolutely deadly, because I believe Sunday he showed that he could still make the big throws down the field that you need to make in this league. And I believe it was PFF said that he had 6 big time throws. And what that means is that is 6 big time throws that resulted in positive play or that were considered big time throws for the fact of like he threw the ball deep and say there was a pass interference call. Well, they consider that a big time throw. So, you know, everybody looks at the 2 interceptions and was like, oh, Brady was terrible. But the first interception, I do not put on him. The second one, yes, is 100% on him. But no, I do not think this is a decline of Tom Brady. Give him a couple more weeks, and I think they're going to hit stride, and you better watch out.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is out of the ordinary for him. I think these next 2 weeks will kind of be solidifying my point of view on it. I'm still kind of indifferent. Obviously, he knew he was pretty much checked out of New England during those last 2 games. They were still in that race to get home field advantage, but I think he could kind of start seeing the writing on the wall. I think that Dolphins game pretty much solidified where he was going after that, and it was definitely not back to New England. So I think these next 2 weeks will definitely dictate on how my outlook looks on Brady, whether he should be hanging up the cleats after this year or if he's still got enough in the tank to keep going. For this week 2 matchup, not depending on your favorite team or who you like, what's the one game that if you could only watch one game this week that you would turn on the TV and say, hey, I think this is going to be a good matchup. I want to watch this game this week. Zach, I'll start with you.
I would say Giants and Bears. I do think that the Bears seem like a team they could make strides to get like a wild card this year. And then with the Giants, they're with Daniel Jones for another year, like this year. I know it's only week 1, but he hasn't really seemed that good to watch, especially in that Steelers game last week. I didn't think he actually had the guts to keep going and actually win that game for him.
Bryce, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, looking at the schedule here this week, there's a lot of games I'm highly interested in. Falcons, Cowboys, Rams, Eagles, Broncos, Steelers, Washington football team, Cardinals, I mean, Titans, Jags. I mean, who would have ever thought the Jags beat the Colts, Patriots, Seahawks, Saints, Raiders? But if I had to pick one that I am very interested in, and it is the Washington football team at the Arizona Cardinals. And the reason why is I want to see if Dwayne Haskins can show that, hey, I am a franchise caliber quarterback. He showed glimpses of it week 1. I want to see if he can replicate that week 2. And I also want to see how this high power Cardinals offense can do against this Washington football team's front 4. Their line is not very good. You know, it's 2 young quarterbacks, Kyler and Dwayne. So I want to see how they face off against each other. They both came out 1-0 week 1. So I definitely think it's going to be a great game. I hope for the best. I mean, I hope that they put up some big numbers. But yeah, this game definitely has my interest. Another one that not a lot of people are talking about is Vikings Colts. Look for Philip Rivers to bounce back in. Look for Philip Rivers to bounce back in that one. I definitely think that the Colts will have a bounce back week as a team, but I just think that Vikings roster is too good.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I'm torn between the Jaguars Titans game, both coming in 1-0 on the season. Seeing if the Jaguars game was just a fluke, which I think a lot of us are thinking are. Even if they lose this game, but they're competitive, I would still say that's a win in the Jaguars book. Might not be a win in their draft column book, but I think it's showing that they're at least more competitive than people were giving them credit for. I still do think the Titans come out on top, but I think that's a very interesting game there. The one that I would say I'd have to pick, though, is the primetime game of the week, Patriots versus Seahawks. You just got 2 completely different offenses, in my opinion, facing off. Both really good defenses or average, above average defenses. And I just want to see how Cam does against this team. This will be his first true test in a Patriots uniform. I think that it'll be a good game for the Seahawks. I think the Seahawks will come in with a little bit more of an advantage. I think they're just a better sound team all the way around offensively and defensively. But I think it'll be a really good primetime game to watch. So let's kind of shift gears and head into some MLB talk. MLB has getting ready to wind down their season here and start playoffs here really soon. Before we kind of get in the nitty gritty of all the baseball stuff that we want to talk about, Bryce, what's your kind of thoughts on this new bubble that they're going to be producing for the MLB?
I mean, I'm fond of it just because I believe you look at how it's worked in the NHL and the NBA. It's proven that it's capable of working. But I think that the MLB's guidelines have shown that they are capable of working as long as players follow them. And I think that the repercussions of all the players and teams not following them is they have to play in a bubble. Now, the one reason I am excited to watch them play in a bubble is you get to show off the new stadium in Arlington, the new Texas Rangers Stadium.
Yeah.
And I believe it's the Dodger Stadium. And then what? I don't remember what the other two stadiums were that they're playing.
Padres and Houston?
Houston.
I think
Astros. It was Houston. I mean, those are all great stadiums to play at. So I think it'll be interesting because everybody's going to be on a level playing field. You know, there's no all Yankee Stadium short porch, you know, bull crap like they always say, you know, or some of those bigger ballparks. Oh, you know, you can't hit it out in that ballpark because it's, you know, 350 feet to the corners, like Miami Stadium, for example. You know, so I think having everybody on a level playing field, you know, all right, everybody has the same no home, no away games. You're here, best team wins. I think it'll make for good baseball. So I'm definitely a fan of it. I'm definitely interested to see, you know, how it will work for the MLB. It's a lot easier to work for MLB or for the NBA and NHL, as you know, you can pretty much reuse the same stuff. But for MLB bubble, I mean, you know, you got to go out there and redo the dirt every day and the grass. So I think it'll be interesting. But I think MLB's got the money and the smarts to cover all the logistics of it.
Yeah, and honestly, on that, I think they're only going to have two or three teams at each location. So it's really not much more than just playing a simple doubleheader almost every other day or only having one game every day on that field. So I think that the facilities-wise, I think they'll be able to keep up on it, and that I think that we'll have some good baseball played at those facilities. One thing that I'm kind of just thinking of here is, do you think this might change the tides for baseball? And instead of just having that one all-star game at a location, this is one thing that I really feel that baseball should look into personally. I've always kind of had this conviction. I'm more of a traditionalist when it comes to baseball. But I think getting the honor, like the Super Bowl, to host a big game like that, it does a well for that team throughout the whole year, and it brings in a lot of money for that team. So if we started this trend of where each team hosted the World Series every year, you would be getting those fans going out there, and you'd get people from around areas that would just say, hey, I have the opportunity to go to a World Series game, dependent on whether I like the team or I don't like the team, but I get to still say I went to a World Series game because it was closer to my location. Whereas these other teams, like the Diamondbacks, haven't hosted one in almost 20 years. The Padres haven't been close in over 20 years. The Dodgers haven't been close to over 20 years. But you have the opportunity to get a team like the Twins versus the Padres in Fenway. Like, that's just an iconic baseball stadium to be playing a World Series event at. What would be kind of your thoughts on that, Bryce? And then I'll go over to you, Zach, and kind of see what your thoughts are.
I don't know how I feel about that. I like the idea of it, but I also don't. I think for the NFL, I think it works for the NFL because it's only one game. You know, if the World Series was only one game, that's fine. But you got to figure, okay, for the NFL, people say it's in Atlanta. Well, a lot of people in Georgia are going to pay a lot of money to go to it. Well, okay, they get to go there, you know, once every 4 years, for example, as you know, but. And it's only one game. It's easier to sell at one game. Baseball, it's seven games, and you would have to play it in a major city like a New York, like a Boston. I don't think you could rotate between every MLB stadium. I mean, you know, I don't think Atlanta's going to be selling out a seven-game World Series or St. Louis, but Miami's going to be selling out a seven-game World Series for whoever's playing in it. So, I think it works the way it is, just because the fact of you play 162 games, if you have the best record, I think you deserve the right to have that home field advantage, those four games at home over a seven game series. And I don't think the idea is great for the MLB. I think it works for the NFL because then again, it's only one game. You look at, hockey, basketball, baseball, you play, multiple game series. So, you can have that home and away time instead of playing at just one location for seven games.
Yeah, and agreed. And I wouldn't say that this is probably the best idea. I'm just kind of throwing this idea out there. Zach, what's kind of your opinion on this?
To me, it seems very plausible to do, but in reality, it just won't happen. Because if you do it with like hockey and you put like the Kings and the Rangers out in Boston,
yeah,
you can't really do it unless you just completely put it in one stadium each night and it just continues on. Mm-hmm. As for football, it's different because you can play like the Saints and the Chiefs. You can put them in the Super Bowl in Las Vegas,
yeah,
because it's one game. It's not seven or however.
It's a weekend. It's not a week.
Yeah, it's not like a whole week where like. Hockey's like every week you gotta win, keep going.
Yeah, and I definitely agree with all that. I just kind of a thought that I've always kind of had over the years. I think it would be cool if they did that. Just kind of had like a week long event running. I think you could definitely get the series over a lot faster than the 2 weeks that they drag it out for. I think you can go to two games, one game off, two games, one game off, two games, one game off, and then have that seventh game if you make it seven. It's a lot shorter than this series that they got. I think it would be just something interesting that I don't think that they're ever going to get there, but I think it'd be something interesting. Let's get on
quick. I want to throw out something. Since you brought that up, I want to bring something else up regards to baseball. We all know that, the expanded playoffs, eight teams from each league are making it this season and this season only. But my biggest thing with the MLB is only five teams make it each year. I think they should expand that to six. That way, possibly two teams from each division could make the playoffs and set it up similar to the NFL, to where your top two records get, the kind of like buys or whatever for, but mm-hmm. then, those two wildcard teams play a three game series. Those teams win, advance, play those top teams in a seven game series, and then you advance, and then you can play another seven game series in the championship series. That's how I think the MLB should go with the playoffs moving forward, because I do not like having the one wild card game and then only five teams making it, one team going home then, and then you just jump down to four. I personally do not like that. I think having more playoff baseball would generate more revenue, and you could cut the season back by 6, 7, 8, 10 games. 162 is long. Some players complain about it. Some players like it. I think cut it down to 150, 152 would be perfect. Extend the playoffs a little bit. It would generate more money, because I know a lot more people who don't watch baseball every day say that they watch playoff baseball but not regular season baseball. So that's just my idea.
Yeah, and playoff baseball is a lot more intense than regular baseball. There's a lot more strategic going on, a lot more. You got to be thinking a game or two down the road, if I'm going to use this pitcher here, not going to use this pitcher here. But yeah, I definitely think that would be interesting to see kind of how this season goes and how having so many teams in it looks and what their TV ratings are. Well, their TV ratings are probably going to be higher just because there's no other option. But still, just kind of seeing how the flow of it goes and how players react to it, I think will be key for this next season. Let's switch gears. Your Yankees, they were...
Oh, what's up? Zach, what's that? I want to get Zach's thoughts on
what was your thoughts
potentially
on
expanded playoffs.
I think it would work, especially like how the NFL does it, or even like NHL, like with the eight seeds that make it to the playoffs, and then you cut it down like that. I would also think, too, like, should the rules they added this year stay with the same way? Like how this year they added the extra innings rule, you put a guy on second base to start off in the 10th inning. Rule. Should that stay as well? Because I don't really think that rule should stay. I think that the universal DH should stay because it really takes off the pitchers from everything. But I think the six-team system would work if you get the right teams in it and get more fans into it as well.
Yeah. I agree. Bryce, what's your thoughts on this universal DH that we've kind of had this last season?
I love it. I've been saying for the last few years, National League needs to adopt the DH, because when the American League goes to play National League, you automatically know the AL pitchers are going to be automatic Ks because they're going to strike out. They don't hit all season long. They just go out there and pitch. And it wouldn't really affect pitchers that much, I think, by not hitting, because there's no pitcher that's a great hitter. I mean, there's some that are better than others. I mean, Mad Bum's pretty good. Syndergaard's pretty good. DeGrom's decent at hitting. But then you got guys like John Lester at the 0-for-57 streak or whatever. So I think in a league now where it is driven, where most of the popularity is driven by runs and home runs, adding the universal DH would be a plus. I think you look at a team like preseason, like the Braves, you know, you add the universal DH, well, then they can throw a guy like Marcell Ozuna, who they signed there, and then, you know, play Encarte, Acuna, and, you know, Adam Duvall out in the outfield, for example. So, you know, I think it would make for better baseball and higher ratings and, you know, obviously generate more money just to stick with the universal DH. And then National League pitchers would just have to worry about pitching.
Yeah, I'm very torn when it comes to this subject, because I was very anti universal DH, but seeing it play out this last year, I must say that I have enjoyed watching baseball with that extra DH in there. I think it adds another element of, you know, that there's not 27 outs, you know, there's not three free outs. Obviously, if they pitch in there, they get more at bats throughout the game, but there's still, you still got to get 27 outs at the end of the day. You know, there's not at least two freebies in there. And I think those two freebie at-bats with this new universal DH coming in there, now you have to get a full 27 outs in the NL, which I think this game needs more offense, and I think that injects that into the NL. I think it makes the NL games more fun to watch now. I think you're getting more high-scoring games out of the NL this year because of that universal DH, just because teams are more aggressive when it comes to hitting, base running, stealing. Instead of playing this small ball, dink and dunk game that they've always played their whole career, and ever since the NL has not adopted the DH. So I think it's something that I think the players union and everybody should address and say, was it more, how did they feel the product was? Was it better for them? Was it worse for them? But I think fan-wise, I think fans are liking it more. I think it's putting the pitchers, you're saying this is your only job. You don't get to go up there and stand and watch three pitches go by and risk getting injured or hit because one of your teammates made the other pitcher mad, so they're going to throw at you because you're the pitcher, which that's a very low chance of happening, but still, that's probability still there. But I still think it's definitely
another thing real quick, also, when you look at like Lucas Giolito or Alex Mills, I mean, it puts more respect on the pitchers for when they pitch a complete game no-hitter. You know, or they do pitch nine innings and only give up one run. It's like you earned every one of those outs throughout the game because you were literally facing nine guys who were hitters. And also in the National League, having that universal DH, that's also another guy who's getting an opportunity to show what he can do hitting, taking the pitcher out. You know, taking the pitcher out, okay, he's your pitcher. That's all he's going to do is pitch. So take him out of the lineup and put a DH in there and let somebody else get an opportunity to make it up to the show. So. That's just another thing I thought of.
Agreed. Did you talk about the universal DH?
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. Awesome. Well, let's get on to the Bronx Bombers. They were about as cold as ice about a couple weeks ago. Now they're hotter than, I'm not quite sure, hotter than hot Cheetos. Then they're, or Takis. I'm pretty white. I can't eat chili salsa sometimes because it's too spicy for me. So pretty, anything's pretty hot for me. But Mr. Yankees fan over there, what are your hot takes right now? Are they going all the way to the pennant and winning it in four?
Well, we lost five games in a row, and we have now won eight games in a row. And out of those eight games, we have scored six or more runs six times. And we have scored double-digit runs at least four times out of those eight games. So are the Bronx Bombers back? Possibly. Are they going to win it all? I don't know. The pitching's not there. Paxton got moved to the 45-day IL. Judge hopefully is supposed to be coming back. Stanton got called up for the Blue Jays series. Yeah, sadly. But, you know, I think you look at a guy like Luke Voit, man, he's just carrying his team. The energy he's bringing every night with his bat, hitting all these bombs. He's definitely been the leader of this team this year with guys like Glaber, Judge, Stanton all being injured. And then, you know, Gary Sanchez absolutely being terrible. But, yeah, I mean, can we win the pennant? I definitely think so. I mean, you know, I thought we were the best team in baseball going into the season. If everyone stayed healthy, and hopefully everybody can get healthy before the playoffs, and we can be healthy going into the playoffs, hopefully we can get the Twins first round. That would be nice. Second round, that would also be nice. But, you know, I mean, I just look at in the American League, and I just – if the Yankees are healthy, I don't see another team that can compete. Maybe the White Sox, but you're looking at a lot of inexperience in the postseason there, so I look for a lot of guys to not be as good. The Indians obviously have the experience, but their pitching took a hit when they traded away Clevinger. With Athletics losing Chapman, I don't see them being a force. So I think the Yankees, if everybody's healthy and clicking, could have an easy road to playing the Dodgers or Padres in the World Series.
Awesome. Yeah, I haven't been following those Yankees too closely here in the last couple weeks. I've been kind of more focused on that NL West battle that we got going on there. There was a big series out west this last weekend. Dodgers did clinch playoff berths, so they are in the playoffs. So are the White Sox. They have clinched their berth into the playoffs for this season. They will be one of the 8 teams in each respective division. I think the Padres showed that they have potential to be there. Game 1 versus the Dodgers, it seemed like the roles were reversed. Obviously, I'm from San Diego. I've seen a lot of Padres-Dodgers games, watched a lot of them. The Dodgers always had this stigma over the Dodgers always had this stigma over the Padres that they would just get the Padres in a funk. They would always be close with them, but they would have one bad inning against the Dodgers. The Padres would, and they would put the Dodger, and that would put the Dodgers ahead by 3 or 4 runs, and the Padres could never recruit from that. In game 1 of this series, there was something that switched. I felt Max Muncy made 2 bonehead plays that were terrible. And me being a first baseman for 14 years, pained me to watch because these are routine plays. But he brain farted out on a baseball field, which I get, it happens. But they were in the most crucial scenarios that put the Dodgers in a predicament of, oh crap, this is what happened. We do to them, not them do to us. So I think there was a little bit of a tide shift. The Dodgers reinserted their dominance. The next 2 games, they ended up taking the series in 2 out of 3. But I think that little shift put a little bit of doubt in my mind for the Dodgers. Like, if they don't get it done this year, I think that there's a window for the Padres to kind of start inserting their dominance in the NL West and giving the Dodgers a hard time. I still think the Padres are about a year or two away from that. But I think with this last series, they opened the door just a teeny bit to start seeing that light of, okay, we can hang with these guys. We don't have to roll over with them. We can finish this game off in the 8th or 9th if we're still within a run or 2 because we have a good enough offense too. But yeah, I think it was a very interesting series just to watch in general and just kind of cover and watch. What were your thoughts on the series, Zach?
Well, I watched the first game of the series, and I just remember them bringing in Jansen, and I just thought in my head, he's not the closer. He's not what we remember anymore. Because I remember how, like, when he first came in, he was dominant as a closer. Nobody could get behind him. And when I saw San Diego just kept peppering and getting on base with him, I know this team can win a World Series if they can have good, competent bullpen. And with San Diego, they have a really good bullpen compared to us. And I want Dodgers to win it, but I know in my heart they could lose it again.
Yeah, so I just kind of got a couple questions for you guys. Just yes or no. We don't need to go in depth with this. I just kind of want to hear your thoughts. Not hear your thoughts, but just kind of give me a yes or no. Bryce, I'll start out with you. Does Seattle make the playoffs? Yes or no? Are they able to come back and get on a run to make the playoffs? They're sitting outside of the wild card by 3 or 4 games. There's still about 10 to 12 games left. Are they able to get on that run and get out there?
No, I think the Astros have just, I think they have too much of a better team. I think the Astros will hold on. They got the 3-game lead over the Mariners, 3.5 over the Orioles and Tigers. I just don't think those teams are good enough to make up 3 games with how many games is left in the season. Unless the Astros just fall apart, I would love to see that and then miss the playoffs. But I just do not think that's going to happen. I think even though they cheated the last couple years and it definitely degrades the players that they have, I still think they have a more talented roster than the Seattle Mariners. So I think the Astros hold on.
Do you think the Astros hold on, yes or no, Zach?
I think the Astros will hold on.
Okay. Here we go. Do the Miami Marlins make it past the first round of playoffs, yes or no, Bryce? Do they make it to, I guess, what would be deemed the DS of...
Real quick, is the playoffs, are they playing like one through, like NBA, like one, or like NHL, like 1-8, 2-7, 3-6, 5-4, or
yeah, is it so just... it's going to be 1-8, 2-7, 3-6, 4-5.
Yes, the Marlins make it past the first round of the playoffs.
Zach?
I'm going to say no. I just don't think they've got the firepower to get into the NLDS.
Yeah, I'm not supposed to answer during this, but I'm going to say yes. I think they make it past there. I think that they shocked the baseball world.
The reasoning for my pick, because the way it's looking now, they would play the Atlanta Braves and their very, very, very depleted pitching staff in the first round. That's why I think they make it to the NLDS. Then probably get swept.
Agreed. Does Tampa Bay represent the AL in the World Series? Yes or no, Bryce?
No.
Zach?
No. I don't think at all they should be there.
Okay, here we go. For your championship series in the NL, are we going to see Dodgers versus Padres? Because I think the way the brackets worked out, that's how they would meet in the playoffs.
Yes, there's not another team in the NL that compares to either of those two. You could maybe throw in the Cubs, but Giants, if they get hot in the playoffs. But no, I mean, it's definitely going to be those two teams.
Do 4 teams from the NL West make it? They're only 2 games behind Philadelphia right now. The Colorado Rockies are vying for that last wild card spot. Do 4 teams from the NL West make it? Yes or no, Bryce?
No.
Zach?
I'd say no, too.
Okay, agreed. I still think I predicted it early in the season that 4 teams from the NL West were going to make the playoffs this year with this expanded roster, so I'm going to still hold out hope and say yes. The Phillies, they're looking hot right now. They're playing decent baseball, better than they were early in the season. But, yeah, let's switch up to some – Bryce, you got some hockey talk ready for us. We know you're not a big hockey guy.
Well, I don't have hockey talk. I have hockey questions for the hockey experts. I'll put it that way. All right. So we have the Tampa Bay Lightning against the dreaded Dallas Stars for the Stanley Cup Finals. And I want to get both of your opinions on it. But me not knowing anything about hockey, I'll start with you, Zach. Which team has the better goalie going in to this series?
If you look on both teams on paper, I would say Dallas have a way better goaltender, because it's shocking to me seeing Anton Khudobin actually looking better on paper than Andrei Vasilevskiy. And even though I hate both teams, I really do fancy Dallas winning this entire thing.
Yeah, I'm
all right, Lucas, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm kind of shocked by both teams' gameplay. I honestly thought Tampa Bay would be looking a lot better going into this final series. The Islanders gave them a lot more of a headache than I thought they should and were going to, getting that series to game 6. But I don't know. I just feel like Tampa Bay's due. And I feel like if Vasilevsky can make that switch, I think he's the better goalie than Khudobin. But I just think it's the supporting cast around you that makes the goalie who they are. And I think Tampa Bay might have that little better of a supporting cast over the Dallas Stars. Even though I'm pulling for the Stars to win, but that's just my thoughts.
All right. Which team has the better defense going into this series? Start with you, Lucas.
My personal opinion, again, just kind of going off that last statement, supporting cast. I think Tampa Bay has a better defensive people around them. They are both playing with – they're playing with a shorter defense, or is it they have less forwards on right now?
I think they have more forwards.
Yeah, they have more forwards than they do have defensemen right now, which is a little concerning given that defense is such a critical part. Playing with that goalie. Who's number 77? What's his name?
Hedman.
He's been playing some great hockey in the bubble. He's a big guy. He lays the body on people. He's got a good reach, poke checks a lot, gets the puck out, really supports that goalie a lot. So I would kind of say Tampa Bay, even though they do have the shorter staff, I think they have the better. And Ryan McDonough. Ryan McDonough is a great veteran guy that they got from the Rangers. He's been in the playoffs a lot, been in a cup scenario before and lost to the Kings. And so I think that they are able to get it done.
I would say with Dallas for me, because, well, I've always been real hot on Miro Heiskanen. I've always thought the young kid could do well at the NHL level, especially pairing him with Ezra Lindell and Jamie Oleksiak and all their top defensemen down there. I think they have a way hotter defense than Tampa, besides with them having Hedman. That's the only one I can think of besides him and Sergachev that really are hot. Whereas, like, Haskinen's been a goal scorer for Dallas, which is shocking to see.
Mm-hmm.
And I really do fancy Dallas on defending, too.
I have a side question there, Bryce, for Zach. I'm competent enough to understand talking, and I'm not – I know baseball players more than I do the hockey players. Mm-hmm. I watch a lot of hockey, so I understand gameplay. I understand a lot of that stuff. But going into this Cup series, going into the Stanley Cup, would you rather be hot or would you rather have experience? Or do you think a little bit of both makes for that right mix?
I think for a little bit of both because, well, like with the Kings team, they were not hot in 2012. They were not good. I will say that on my own team. They were not good that year. But when you have a great captain like Dustin Brown and you've got that big line defense with Mitchell and Mike Green,
mm-hmm.
They just gelled well with the hockey system they had with Daryl Sutter. With Dallas, they've got a really good team that can gel. Same with Tampa, but Tampa's got a way harder offense as well with the way, like with Kucherov and just like all their trades they went to fix their offense with Goudreau and what's his name? I can't think of his name now. Blake Coleman.
Mm-hmm.
I never would have thought he'd be in Tampa, but really just seeing them play really sees how they gel together with the system they both have.
All right. Next question. We'll start out with Zach. Who has more points this series for the Lightning? Nikita Kucherov or Braden Point?
I think it's Point, actually.
In the Cubs here?
I think it's him because he's been scoring a ton for them, especially.
Didn't he hurt?
Yeah, I think. Well, no. He was on the lineup last night. He was on the bench last night.
I think Stamkos is hurt.
Yes. Yeah, Stamkos is injured. I know Point got injured.
I thought Point got injured in the last game.
He came back. He was on.
Oh, he did.
Last night.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear the update. But yeah, I think Point does too. Just to answer that question, he's been hot lately.
All right. Now for the Stars, who has more points, Miro Heiskanen or Jamie Benn?
I'll take this question first. I think for the Dallas Stars to have a good Cup series for the Stanley Cup, I think that Jamie Benn has to pick up his offensive duties and keep scoring goals for them because you can't rely on a young defenseman to keep scoring you points. So I think for them to be competitive and have a shot at winning, I think it's got to be Jamie Benn to take on that. He's in their captain too, right?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, he's got to take up that captain role and get the job done and not put it on a rookie.
yeah, they've been relying on their youth a lot this series, because when they won the series against Tampa, or not Tampa, who was it?
The Avalanche?
Vegas.
Oh, Vegas, yeah.
Where, in Estroza? No, the Finnish guy, Kiviranta. I would have never thought that dude would have been the game winner out of anything I've seen in hockey. And I remember this dude because he played for Texas Stars and AHL down here. And just watching him play is kind of weird how I remember seeing him play here. I think the youth really is really what Dallas' big thing on their team.
All right, last question. Who wins the series and in how many games?
You want to take that one first?
I'm going to take this one. I'm going to say Dallas in six.
I'm going to say, I'll give you my hard answer and I'll give you what I think. My hard answer is Dallas in seven. My strategic one is Tampa in seven. I think Tampa just has a lot of veteran guys. And I think youth is good, but I think these guys that have been in this scenario before and been around the block a couple more times than a lot of these young guys, I think that's going to pay dividends in that seventh game, knowing how to bear down and win that game when it really counts. And I always go off the motto, you got to lose one before you can win one. And I think that this is the one where the Stars lose it. But I think this is a very encouraging thing. And this helps you go out and get better players this next offseason to keep building around them.
So with my limited knowledge about hockey and being a Predators fan and the hate for the Dallas Stars and the hate for Corey Perry, I wouldn't mind if he got knocked out the first game. I'm going to say Lightning in a 4-0 sweep, get the brooms out. Don't take that to the bank, people, because I know nothing about hockey. I can name maybe 3, 4, or 5 players on the Preds team, so please do not bet that. But if you do and you win, hey, at me.
They got Wayne Gretzky on that team, right? Right, Bryce?
Yeah, isn't he like the Michael Jordan of hockey?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was a joke.
I know more modern players, popular players like Crosby, Ovechkin, Roman Josi. Granlund for the Preds, man. My first Preds game we went to was when they played Calgary back in February before COVID happened. And he hit like a game winner with like point something left on the clock, and I absolutely lost my mind. I was like, "Holy crap, this is great!"
Yeah. Hockey games, I would argue, are some of the best live action games that you can watch. If you gave me my choice of either going to a football game, a baseball game, a basketball game, or a hockey game, I gotta say, depending on who the matchup is in baseball, I gotta say 9 times out of 10. I got to take that hockey game because you never know what's going to happen. You never know if there's going to be a nice tussle out on the ice. But, yeah, I think hockey is just a great game to watch.
I mean, I've only been to one hockey game that I can remember. Football's still the top of the list for me. Basketball and baseball are tied, honestly. Football's at the top, then basketball, baseball. Hockey's probably tied with them, but I've only been to one game, so. But I had a great experience at that one, so it was pretty nice. But I know we're about to wrap up a show, but I want to get into something Zach said earlier that really caught my attention and really kind of got me low-key worked up. That he said the Tennessee Titans-Denver Broncos game was one of the worst games he's ever watched. And I want to go out and point out at least 5 worse games than that game just in week one, okay? I'll first point out the Jets and the Bills. The Bills absolutely dominated them. The Jets, I mean, it was 21-3 at the half, and then so the Bills were like, okay, let's let this youth football team score some touchdowns to make them feel good about themselves here in the second half. Dolphins-Patriots was worse. The Dolphins looked absolutely terrible. Fitzmagic was god-awful. Cam Newton ran all over that defense, okay? And Eagles-Redskins was good. Raiders-Panthers, I wouldn't say that was necessarily a better game or worse game. I would say it was equal to. Titans-Broncos was defense. Raiders-Panthers was absolute zero defense. It was like Obama's immigration policy. Let's let everybody walk through the line here and get a touchdown. It's like, let's just let everybody score. Browns Ravens was an absolute blowout. That was terrible. Baker looked like dog crap. Lamar looked like an MVP again. Chargers Bengals was absolutely awful. I mean, it was worse than the Titans Broncos game because neither quarterback threw for over 200 yards. I believe, well, Joe Burrow may have. Joe Burrow had one good run, and literally I could go to that Titans Broncos game and pull out five plays that were as equal to as that. And then let's see, what's another one? Steelers-Giants was terrible. Steelers smoked the Giants. Danny Dimes looked terrible. Saquon, I mean, it was like he had concrete blocks around his ankles because every time they handed him the ball, he was stuffed in the backfield because his offensive line couldn't block for him. So those are the games that were definitely worse than Titans-Broncos, and I will die on that hill arguing that every day from now on.
What are your thoughts there, Zach?
Yeah, one excuse I'll say here is because I didn't watch most of the games. But I did watch the Raider game, and I did agree with the defense. Our defense was nowhere to be seen in that game. The only main guy I saw that was good for us, besides Mad Max, was Jonathan Abram with his 12 tackles. And then with the Chargers game, I kept turning it back and forth, and the game just... I couldn't stand watching it because of the – well, first, because of the jerseys the Chargers were wearing, which is awful.
They are. Very.
And
– Whoa. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. Okay, I got something else to argue about with you now. Continue on. Sorry.
Okay. And then, well, them having to rely on Tyrod Taylor as their quarterback, you could have got any other better quarterback than him. Like, even Jamarcus Russell would have been a lot better than him. Maybe even Jason Campbell. Who knows?
One, Tyrod Taylor led the Bills to the playoffs for the first time in like a billion years just a couple years ago. And I, if I'm not mistaken, they beat the Jaguars. No, they lost to the Jaguars because that was the year the Jaguars went to the AFC Championship game. And two, the Chargers arguably had the best uni design of the offseason. I put them in the Falcons up there at the top. I thought the Chargers were absolutely fire. Then you got the that other team in Los Angeles who apparently works for Best Buy with their uniforms on all the time. They're still pretty good, but they look like they were made at Best Buy. But the Chargers, though, they went to the throwback with the yellow pants, and then you – I mean, their home unis are absolutely fire. The away unis, the white and yellow, okay, I can see how that – but nah, I'm a fan. They're definitely better than the Arizona Cardinals' bland crimson uniforms. They're terrible. The Giants could use – I like their color scheme. They just need an update. You know, the 49ers could use a little tweaking here and there. The Bengals arguably have the worst jerseys in the NFL, in my opinion, them and the Jags. So I'm a huge fan of the Chargers jerseys, but
how is the Washington football team not on that list at all, Bryce?
Dude, I like their colors, man. I can't help it that their logo's absolutely crap. I put them on the exemption list for this year for uniforms because they don't know what they are. I mean, they're like a half transgender, half normal person. They don't know what to identify as, so they're just kind of there.
Can I just say it's a lot harder to say Washington football team
than Washington Redskins.
Yes, because I'm watching the game going, this sounds like a soccer club. It doesn't sound like a football team at all.
I thought I was bad because I do these NFL game picks with some buddies from school here. And I kept saying Washington Redskins during the thing. And then I literally turned on the TV and was watching, I think it was ESPN, and Ryan Clark kept calling them the Washington Redskins. I was like, okay. Or no, it was Reggie Bush. It was Reggie Bush kept calling them the Washington Redskins. I was like, all right, I don't feel that bad now.
Awesome. Well, we're almost about to an hour there, Bryce. I think that it's time to wrap it up. I think we're going to try to get some social media out there right now. We're going to try to create an Instagram page and start getting our name out there. We are on our third episode. If you haven't listened to any of them, you can go back and listen. It'll be posted on Spotify and all your other areas that you can listen to, podcasts at. And yeah, Bryce, you got anything else to add?
Yeah, great show today. Really enjoyed doing this. Definitely loved having Zach on, man. I like having him on. I like having somebody to argue with, man. It makes it fun. You know, it makes it more enjoyable. Definitely want to have him back on here pretty soon. And definitely y'all can talk about hockey, and I'll ask all the questions because I don't know anything about that. But definitely like arguing about baseball and football. Hopefully we get some debate stuff going on here pretty soon, because I want to take somebody to the cleaners with that. So.
Yeah. Yeah, awesome. Yeah, thank you, Zach, for coming on and helping us out this week and filling in for all of our Stanley Cup needs and hockey playoff needs. We appreciate it, and we'll definitely have you on soon. And we enjoyed having you on. And so we will see you guys next week with episode 4. Have a great week. Bye-bye.